And if at any point you would like me to stop the recording, just like let me know.
Sure.
And would you like to face where?
Sure.
So I'm Mayar. Today is July 27th, 2022. It's a Wednesday. It's approximately 11:33. We're at the Tea Garden. And Serena, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, for sure. My name is Serena Perchak. I use she, her pronouns. And I'm a person of mixed ancestry. So I'm Irish, Ukrainian, and Métis, originally from Treaty One territory, which is what is now known as Manitoba. But I've spent most of my life here in southern Ontario on the Haldimand Tract and Dish With One Spoon territory because my mother's family is from southern Ontario. I am a land-based educator with an organization called White Owl Native Ancestry Association and a member of the Wasauktoo-Winnowak Urban Indigenous Garden Collective, which is the Tea Garden is one of the spaces that we look after, including four other spaces kind of around the Waterloo and Wellington regions. And I'm also a master's student studying family relations and human development here at the University of Guelph.
Okay, thank you for introducing yourself. What is your relationship to the Arboretum or to the Tea Garden?
I actually have a few different spaces in the Arboretum that I have a connection to. This is the longest running because I've worked with the organization for a few years now. I do gardening here in the Tea Garden. And I harvest the teas and medicines to dry and then share with the Indigenous community, including the Indigenous Student Center here on campus. We give them butts of sage and for their smudging and offering of and tobacco as well from other gardens to give to elders and whatever the students and the staff need. And then I also have a connection to the Nookamess House site, which is across the Arboretum. Which is unrelated to this space, but because it's all one network of larger spaces, I'm also involved with Nookam's House because of my supervisor, Kim Anderson. That's going to be her research lab. It already is, actually. She uses it, even though there's no building. So I have quite a few connections here to the Arboretum. Plus, being a student of the University of Guelph, I like to come on walks here. Especially when I've had long days on campus and I just kind of come and walk through.
Okay, thank you so much for sharing that. Mm-hmm. So would you be able to describe the place to me? Like, what are you facing right now?
Right now I'm facing our newest bed. This one, you can see, it has a very small amount of perennials in it. There's lots of chamomile that we planted this year, and some other, native plant species. We just added this past fall, because prior to that, to the right of this garden bed, is our more established garden bed that's been here since 2018. And there's lots of different sage growing, not a lot of different sage, sorry. I mean, one type of sage, which is prairie sage or mountain sage, used for smudging. And then lots of different other perennials like yarrow is growing there and motherwort. And there's some mountain mint and catnip and lemon balm, all kind of different medicines and teas that can be dried and made into a tea or a salve, or burned for cleansing. But this is kind of, this is the garden where it's primarily just medicines and herbs, that we work with. And then we also added kind of a little seating area in the back there for teaching opportunities. So the Arboretum staff had cut down a tree that was here, that was just kind of to the left of the gardens. They cut the trunk up into stumps so that we could use them as seating area for teaching and staff of the university and faculty are welcome to come here and use that teaching space if they want to. It is a little loud because of Victoria Road, but it's still a nice space to be in. So, yeah.
Okay. And would you be able to tell me the story of what happened here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was trying to pinpoint down like what kind of story I wanted to tell about this space. And I think the overall narrative that I wanted to share about the Tea Garden is that it's a space of beginnings for me, as I was reflecting on my relationship to this space. So I appreciate being a part of this because it made me stop and think about what my relationship is. But it's a place of beginnings for me because actually the first time I ever came to the Tea Garden was before I even worked with this organization. And it was when I was in my undergrad degree here at Guelph as well. And I came to participate in a medicine walk that the organization was running with a Haudenosaunee knowledge holder. And I remember I didn't know where it was, and I was telling you this earlier. People get lost trying to find it because it's kind of nestled in the back area of the Arboretum. But I was lost, and I was running around with somebody who was coming to the medicine walk with me. And we had no idea where we were going, so we had to call somebody who was already there to, like, guide us. But I remember I came around this corner, and Kim, my current supervisor, who I'd never met before, was standing there because she was a part of the collective at that time. And that was the very first time that I met her in person. And it was the first time that I kind of came into relationship with this space, but also the organization that has allowed me to continue to work with this space. And since then, you know, it's the first time that I've also, you know, I've had other beginnings in this space in terms of I've had meetings here. My supervisor Kim again, but I spent a lot of time with her, as you can tell. But I had a meeting with her here as well too, with my colleague Dave Skeen, who does a lot of work with the Wissoctoniwok Collective as well. And we sat down and we chatted about my future as a grad student. It was before I started. My master's program here at Guelph. And we sat down and we talked about my schedule and how I can be involved in both the collective and, you know, the Kitchen Table Lab, which is the name of Kim Anderson's lab. And yeah, I'm still kind of working through these beginnings, but this is also one of the first places that I taught about some of these medicines and teas that are growing here. Last academic year, I partnered with a prof here in the sociology department who was doing a land-based pedagogy project. Gigi Voorhees is the professor. And she had asked me if I would do like a community partnership with her to take her students onto the land and kind of facilitate some learning around place and space creation and connecting to the land and learning from the land. So I took students here and I taught them about what each plant was and how you use them and how you can be in deeper relationship with them. But through that process, I learned a lot too. In teaching others, I still learn. I'm a simultaneous teacher and student. But yeah, I think that really the narrative that I want to paint about the Tea Garden is that, it has facilitated so many relationships for me, including a relationship with the land and the plants that are here, but also with my human relations that I have. And that we continue to learn in this space too. Maybe I'll leave it at that so that I don't ramble anymore.
Okay, so you said that this place, like, is a place of, like, beginnings. Mm-hmm. Was there, like, a specific moment that you felt like yeah, this is a place of, like, beginnings and this means a lot to me? Or is there, like, or was it just, like, a bunch of different, like, experiences you had here?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a bunch of different experiences, to be honest. Because I came to this realization probably yesterday when I was thinking about the story that I wanted to tell to you in this space. Yeah, I think that, and maybe now that I'm thinking in that way, there will be other things that come up as I think of, like, a place of beginnings as well. Like, it just came into my head, too, like, our relationship with the Arboretum began in this space as well, our organization. And we've had it's 2022 now, so we've had a relationship with them for 4 years now. Because we both, you know, traverse these spaces and we're both trying to learn from the land, and grow things, to share with other people, whether it be for, you know, the purposes of walking by and appreciating its beauty, or for, like, medicinal use, to share with larger community. Yeah, so I think maybe, reflecting on that more, there might be even more beginnings that pop up, but that's the way that I, like, succinctly thought about it in my mind, is that this space has really facilitated a lot of, like, happy beginnings for me, so.
Okay, and how do you feel like that has, like, impacted you?
Mm.
Like, that, how did that, like, impact your, like, experience, like, working here?
I think, I don't know, it made it more intimate, and being a student on campus here too, it provided this, like, I don't know, space of comfort for me here and the Arboretum too, knowing that that was here if I needed it, you know, to come and be out on the land and, you know, continue learning about these different plants that I'm helping to grow. I like to say that before I became involved with Wasak Tuanawak and White Owl, I was like, I had very minimal garden knowledge. But having spaces and places like this to actually help me to come into relationship with these plant relations, I think is just, it's a really spiritual and, like, intimate and emotional process. And so I think really that's how I can sum it up.
Okay. And do you feel like this space has been, like, essential for you to build community around, like, in the university or even mm-hmm. just in Guelph?
Yeah. I think it has. I mean, I've gotten to meet a lot of people in this space. But also we use it as, like, a teaching space, with, the students that we work with, the Indigenous students every summer. It's also a place that other people other than our collective use. So there's an elder here in Guelph, her name is Carol Tyler. She comes here and she harvests the sage or, and whatever else she needs, from this garden whenever she would like to. And she also has, an Indigenous food sovereignty group that works here in Guelph. They just started their first, like, youth program this summer. And they come here and they do teachings as well. So we open this space up to any sort of relationship and community building. And I think, you know, as it grows physically, but also, you know, hopefully in, like, popularity, because, you know, some people don't even know it's here. hopefully this will be a space for other people to use as well in order to build community, because it's facilitated so much for, you know, us so far.
Okay. And do you have any experiences where you were kind of, like, teaching, and is there any specific experience that you would like to share with me where you were, like, teaching in this space?
Mm-hmm. Well, I use this space, I've used it multiple times for teaching with non-Indigenous and Indigenous peoples. So, as I mentioned, I did teaching for a second year sociology course this past summer with students that were enrolled in the course that opted to do a community engaged learning assignment. And that was interesting because I got to teach about like medicinal uses and like what each plant was, which was really interesting because it helped me to revisit myself, but also to share students who didn't really identify as like being gardeners or like out on the land a lot or anything like that. So it was cool to see just what they could like absorb. And then I bring our Indigenous youth that we hire to this space pretty frequently throughout the summer. It's a smaller garden, and it's their perennials that are established, so it doesn't need as much attention as our other gardens. So we're not here every day like our food gardens in Kitchener and Waterloo. But it's a nice place to come to have, you know, not only a change of scenery, but a chance to bring students back to see how the land has changed over time, but also so that they can come into relationship with some teas and medicines, especially ones as sacred as sage. And so this is a space of learning for a lot of people, including myself. But I try to take what I learn in it and share it with others. So whenever I can have people here, I like to. And yeah, I know there has been other teaching in this space as well from our collective that hasn't involved me, like prior to my involvement with the organization. But it really has been a space of teaching for a lot of people.
Okay. And would you be able to tell me like how you came about like being involved in this space?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I became involved in Wasauktoowinawak and the Tea Garden initially because of that first medicine walk that I participated in my undergrad. I believe it was in my third year. Maybe it was my fourth. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. The person who I mentioned earlier, who I called on the phone and helped us find this place, she had been involved with this organization before. She was a summer student working in the gardens the year before. And so she introduced me to the organization, and its mandate, and kind of just everything that that they do, and it was really interesting to me because as an urban Indigenous person, it's often hard to find places to reclaim land like this and to come into relationship with the land, because, you know, it's just like it's so infrequent. You know, we're taken outside of people think that, you know, you can't do this kind of learning in the city, but you can. It's just a matter of finding those people and those places that facilitate that. And so this was really important to me, and really significant to happen upon kind of this opportunity when I was least expecting it. But I'm really grateful for it. And I'm forever connected to these spaces now because of that first interaction.
Okay. And this is kind of more a question more so kind of like from like the bigger picture, but like what does the like establishment of the Tea Garden like in the Arboretum on the university, which is like stolen land, tell us about like Indigenous peoples like sovereignty over like the food and the land? Like how do you feel that? How do you feel? Like what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's a tough question. It is. I think that this relationship is a good one, obviously, because between the Arboretum and Wasauktoowinawak, because of what I just mentioned, you know, having spaces and places to come into relationship with the land and figure out your identity, because Indigenous identity is so intimately connected to land. And I mean, capital L land. So I think, you know, the physical space, but also all of the plants, animals, you know, wind, water, air, that and beings that kind of traverse that space. I think that because we're so intimately connected to that, we need places to do this, you know. We need, otherwise, you know, I think that we have an issue. I mean, not to say that we haven't, But I think that we have to have these spaces and places in the city because Indigenous people are increasingly urbanized. I think it's over, I think it's around like 55% of the Indigenous population in Canada lives in like metropolitan areas. But for some reason there's this, you know, there's this idea of Indigenous people living on reserve or in rural spaces, but we're all living here and we're trying to connect with land and with each other. But there's not always the places to do that. And so, having, you know, places like the Tea Garden and the other gardens that, that I'm involved in are really significant because, I mean, I can only speak to my experience, but it's helped me to come into a better understanding of who I am as an Indigenous person because I'm able to be in spaces like this. And some people aren't gardeners, that's fine. So, you know, they find their places in other ways. But for me, this is really significant. And I know for a number of other people that I'm close with in the Indigenous community, having spaces on the land is truly significant. Land and food sovereignty are kind of like it's hard in an urban context too, because, you know, we don't own land. Not that in an Indigenous understanding of land you can own land, but within, you know, like the legal parameters of Western thinking, owning the land is having, you know, complete and total control over what is done to the land. And so I think that's the next step, is finding spaces that, you know, we can have autonomy over and help to bolster the autonomy of the land itself as well.
Okay. And speaking of like issues with like, you know, like having like sovereignty over the land, have you like encountered any challenges with like the university or the arboretum or anything in establishing this space?
I mean, I know that there have been issues, just in general about, you know, fighting that fight for land access and for, you know, land back. There aren't any specific issues that I've had to deal with, in terms of, you know, working with the Arboretum and the university. Maybe it's just because I am more on the land and I'm not involved with that, with those conversations. But, you know, it is a constant struggle for Indigenous people to, like, have full say over what is going on with the places and spaces that they hold so intimately to their hearts and their traditional territory. And so, yeah, I can't say with any certainty any, like, specific issues that we've had. But, you know... I know that they're present, and it's a matter of dialogue between, you know, the university, the Arboretum, and Indigenous peoples in this region. And I think that we've had a growing amount of conversation and communication that's been happening, especially with projects like this and projects like Nookum's House that are happening in the Arboretum. But at the same time, I know that there's clashing between Indigenous and Western ways of thinking, and conversation is really the only way that we can like come to an agreement over how space and place are used. So yeah, sorry, I couldn't think of any specific examples.
Thank you so much for sharing that. That's great. So like the COVID-19 pandemic, how has it like affected like your experience in the Tea Garden?
Well, it has impacted it in that there's been less people around. So an issue that our organization has, is that our gardens are all over the place. So we have one in Guelph, we have one in Cambridge, we have one in Kitchener, we have one in Waterloo. And during the pandemic, we couldn't have, as many volunteers present or as many staff present. just because of, you know, limitations on who could be where. And so it was hard to physically make it to space, to all of our places, in order to care for them. And so, but these are places that community is like meant to be, you know, this is where you build community. And so it was difficult for us to be able to, stay true to that teaching and at the same time, you know, keep everyone safe. So I think that that was an issue, for sure. And we're just kind of getting over that COVID hump, right? I know it's still present, but it seems like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So yeah, it's now that people are able to be present, hopefully, you know, we can be doing the things that we're supposed to be doing on the land, which is having lots of people around.
Okay, so there have been recently a bit of a bounce back on the tea garden.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we expanded, so that's pretty telling, right? We have an entirely new bed. It still needs some work because of these weeds. The thistles, you can see, they're insane in this bed for some reason. And they outcompete a lot of things. And so we actually had strawberries in this bed and they were completely outcompeted and died because of, yeah, just all of the stuff that's going on. It's a learning curve, but you know, we are bouncing back, I think.
Okay, that's great to know. Is there, before we kind of start wrapping up the interview, are there any other experiences that generally, even in the Arboretum, that are connected to this place that you had? Or if you were able to tell me more about if you've been involved in the kitchen table or other places that you've mentioned?
I don't know. Not that I can think of. Can you repeat the first part of the question, sorry, that you said?
Have you had any other experiences that are connected to this place really anything in the Arboretum?
I mean, people have been connected to me through the Arboretum staff because they know that I do work here. And so, for instance, people ask us to donate medicines. For instance, there was a, there's a new walk that was just, a walkway that was just created here in the Arboretum, by Bradley Howe that was related to his master's research. And he had been connected to me through, Justine Richardson, the director of the Arboretum, asking for medicine donations. So we provided sage from the garden and tobacco and sweetgrass. Because of that, we've been able to network and build more connections with other people in the Indigenous community around here. I think just having, you know, some sort of presence here in the Arboretum has meant that we have been consulted and been able to network and communicate with new people. So
okay. And is there you've talked a lot about gardening in this area, in this space and stuff. Is there a specific plant that you would like to tell me more about?
I mean, the biggest thing that we grow here is sage, so maybe I can talk about that. So this sage is, it's a ceremonial type of sage. So it's not the cooking sage that you use in your culinary arts. And it's also a variety of sage that is native to this area. So it's, some people call it mountain sage, some call it prairie sage or women's sage. But it's grown here. And it's really significant because this is used for a significant cultural practice known as smudging. And so basically what's done is we harvest the sage by cutting it a few inches from its base. It's a perennial, so it'll grow back, so we don't take it out by its root. And then we hang it to dry, and then, you know, we process the leaves and share them with the indigenous community, and also keep some for ourselves, you know, because we use it as well. But it's sage is then burned, and the smoke that comes from the sage is used to cleanse. So people use smudging for when they want to set a good intention. So oftentimes when you're at the beginning of something, you sage or you smudge. And you do it because you want to, you know, you want to kind of wipe the slate clean. So you smudge your eyes because you only want to see good things. You smudge your mouth because you only want to say good things. You smudge your ears because you only want to hear good things. And then people, you know, they smudge their hair because of the cultural significance of hair. And generally, depending on how you're feeling, some people like to get a full body smudge all the way to the bottom of their feet. But some people, you know, also do it, you know, when they feel like they need to, like, wash something off of them. When they've just had, like, a bad meeting or something, or something bad has happened. They just need to get that off of them, and sage helps facilitate that. And so it's one of the four sacred medicines. And not everyone is a gardener, as I mentioned. And so, and some people, you know, don't even have space to garden. So we grow this to provide it to the indigenous community so that they can uphold that traditional and culturally significant practice in the city.
Okay, and are there other, like, plants that are used with, like, the sage for smudging?
Sometimes some people mix it. Sometimes people throw in a little bit of sweetgrass or cedar. Those are two of the other sacred medicines. Sweetgrass we don't grow here. It likes wetter soils, and it's pretty dry here. We grow it at another one of our gardens, and that one is braided. It's a grass, just like the name kind of implies, and so it's braided and dried. And that one is representative of kindness. So when you're in need of some kindness, that's when you burn sweetgrass. And some people like to throw that into their bowl when they're smudging. And cedar is also another one that is used. Some people throw that into sacred fires in order to kind of, like, bolster its effect as well. But sometimes it's also burned with sage. And cedar is symbolic of protection. So when you're feeling like you need to be protected, or you need extra healing medicine, you throw cedar in there.
Okay. Thank you so much for sharing that and explaining that well. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the, like, medicine walk that first got you in kind of, like, this pace and stuff. Was the medicine walk, like, located here, or was it located
partially somewhere? It was kind of, we walked around the arboretum a little bit more, and the knowledge holder kind of introduced us to some things and their medicinal uses. But it was partially here, yes. As I said, I wasn't here for that part because I was just, like, coming in at the end because I was lost in the arboretum. But yes, this was kind of, like, the home base for that medicine walk.
Okay, and how has the space changed since, like, the medicine walk?
Well, it's definitely gotten bigger. I think, you know, the sage has taken over a lot, which is good because many people need it. Plants have been added. We added a teaching space. You know, it's kind of ebbing and flowing with the needs of the community. And those needs are medicine and places on the land. So, yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else that you would like to share about that with me, or is there anything else in general you would like to share before we end this interview?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I think I've think I've covered everything that I was thinking about in terms of the space, so.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
Is it okay if I stop recording?
Yeah, yeah. Need a drink of water.